and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Toldot. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Toldot. Rabbi Levenkreuz asked me to note to you that the pasuk that he brings at the beginning of the podcast is from Chaye Sarah. It is also the case that the Gemara that Rabbi Levenkreuz teaches us is mostly focused on events from Toldot. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is an adjunct faculty member of Pardes. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. I've not done a podcast for a while, so it's very, very good to be back. What does it mean to have it all? Sometimes we speak about people who seem to just have it all, usually a perfectly looking family, where the kids are great, everybody seems to get on well, there's enough money. It just seems some people have everything. And somewhat cynically, I sometimes speak about the middle class six principles of faith: spouse, children, house, car, job, money. Do we need to have all six of these in order to feel happy and content in the world? And not surprisingly, this week's parasha has something to say about it. Avram has gotten old, and God, it says in Bereshit 24:1, the first source on your source sheet, the Hashem birech et Avraham bekol, God blessed Avraham in all things. In fact, all three patriarchs are spoken about this way. We read that Yitzchak was blessed bekol, and Yaakov kol, and for those of us who do the long Birkat HaMazon, the full grace after meals, we'll know that at the end it says, Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov bekol mikol kol. That's where it comes from. Each one of them were blessed with everything. But what does it mean to have all things? Is it this middle class checklist that I spoke about? What does it mean to have everything? And in order to answer that, let's learn a piece of Gemara. We're going to be studying Baba Batra 16b at the bottom of your source sheet, where it starts off by saying it is written, Hashem birech et Avraham bekol. What is meant by bekol? Rabbi Meir says, Shelo hayta lo bat, that he didn't have a daughter. Rabbi Yehuda says, Shehayta lo bat, that he had a daughter. And others say, very strangely, Bat hayta lo la Avraham, and that he did in fact have a daughter, and her name was Bekol. Now, obviously, this is very gendered. It's very, very hard to imagine the rabbis thinking of a son, of a boy, as not being a blessing. But let's try and understand what's going on over here. I always say with difficult texts, recognize their difficulty, and then see if there's anything we can learn from them, despite their difficulty. So what could be going on behind is the debate as to whether, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of pru urvu, of be fruitful and multiply, one needs a boy and a girl or two boys. If you say that you need a boy and a girl, then it's obvious that it's good for Abraham to have a daughter, because then he's fulfilled the mitzvah. If not, then perhaps we want to say no, especially since in those times, a girl was an economic liability. One had to pay for a dowry. One had to make sure one looked after her, which did not apply to a boy. And perhaps the third one is really cynical in saying he wasn't really blessed in everything. He just had a daughter called Bekol, and that's what it means. But it really, really wasn't that he was blessed in everything. And this is certainly the Pshat reading. But I think we can look at it another way. And this, in this case, it doesn't matter whether it's a son or a daughter. If we say that he was blessed in that he had a child, that he had a child, I think this is saying that children are inherently a blessing. If Avram is blessed in that he didn't have a child, I think this is a very different conception of what it means to be a parent. And it's saying we love or care, or our children are a blessing for us in as much as they bring us nachas and do what we expect them to do, are economic advantages and not economic liabilities, that somehow our love for them is dependent on them, and therefore in their context, a daughter would not be a good thing, since you were obligated to support her in so many ways. So one is saying it's inherent. Doesn't matter which child, they're always a bracha. Second one is saying it depends on the child. And I think the third opinion, the one of the Achirim, of the others, that says that he had a daughter whose name was Bekol, I think this one is saying that it depends on our approach. It's not inherent. It's not dependent on what the kid does or doesn't do. It depends on how we relate to it. We choose what name to give our children. We choose whether our daughter is Bekol or not. I know that my oldest son is called Yedidya Sova. His second name is Sova, which means satisfied. He was born after after 5 years of us being married. And for us, it was very important that we would call him Sova, expressing our satisfaction, our feeling of completion at having a child. So in this way, how I relate to my child is not regarded as something out there, but to how I feel. Nevertheless, the first thing that we have is one of our checklists. Avram was blessed because he had children. What other opinions are there? Rabbi Eliezer, the Modiite, Hamodai, said that Abraham possessed a power of reading the stars. He was able to read the stars, for which he was much sought after by the potentates, by the kings of the East and the West. So he had fame, he had wisdom, and he was able to see what is still going to happen. Ro'eh et hamolad. This is one of the most powerful things in terms of wisdom. Good business people have it. Good lots of other people have it. Able to read and see what is going to happen next. And it's interesting that Avram was wealthy. I think it's of great significance that the founder of the Jewish people was somebody who was wealthy. That wealth is a challenge. Wealth can be used to good. But over here, what they're talking about is that he could read the stars and he had fame because people wanted to hear his wisdom. He could tell the future. So the first thing he has is children. The second thing he has is wisdom and fame. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai said, Avram had a precious stone hung around his neck, which brought immediate healing to any person who looked up on it. Jekol choleh haro'eh oto miyad mitrapeh. So the next thing he had is the ability to help others. He could cure people. He was a doctor. And when Abraham departed from the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took this special stone and suspended it from the sun. Abaya said, this bears out the popular saying, as the day advances, the illness lightens. Avram was somebody who brought light into the world. He brought healing into the world. He was a good man. So he has children. He has wisdom. He has the ability to help each other. He has wealth. He has fame. And he brings goodness into the world. We now move to the second paragraph. And here we have something fascinating. Devar acher, something else, a different explanation. Shelo merad Esav meyamav, that Esau did not rebel as long as Avram was alive. And we're going to look at that and then look at the next line. And this is absolutely fascinating. It's not that Esau didn't rebel, but Avram didn't know about it. It only happened after he was dead. So he had nachas, or I would say perceived nachas from his children. Paragraph 3 explains it. How do we know this? Because it says, V'yavo Esav min ha-sadeh v'hu ayef. Esau came from the field and was faint. And how do we know that this was the day in which Avram, our father, died? Why? Because we know that Yaakov was making an adashim soup, lentil soup, and he must have been doing it to comfort his father. I just love the Gemara. The Gemara is amazing. This is just so mixing, you know, so out of date, so wrong dated. It's so mixing different eras. What was Isaac doing? He was making lentils. Well, why was he making lentils? He was making lentils because that is what they bring to people who are mourning. Yitzhak was making a lentil soup to bring to mourners. In the West, and that's talking B'marava, that's in Eretz Yisrael, they say in the name of Rabbi Mari, just as the lentil has no mouth, so the mourner has no mouth for speech. A mourner's first meal is brought by others. They want to be silent. They're distraught. They don't want to speak. And so we bring them lentils so that we identify with them. Others say, just as the lentil is round, so mourning comes round to everybody in the world. The lentils are round, and it's a way of saying to me and to you, there's going to be sadness in the world. There's going to be bad times in the world. Here is something to comfort you. So we know it was that Esau rebelled on the day that when Avram was already dead. How do we know? Because Jacob was making lentils. Why are lentils connected with mourning? Either because they have no mouth, they have no fissure, and this will give comfort to the mourner who doesn't feel like speaking, or because it's round to remind us that suffering comes to everybody. And then they say, as some of you might be asking as well, what difference exactly does it make? Mai beneu, ika beneu, limchume bebaye. The difference is, can we bring eggs to a mourner? Because eggs are round, are not round, but they have no mouth. And it depending on which explanation you go. And in fact, the custom is that eggs do have no mouth, and therefore we can serve the mourner's eggs. I think a few fascinating things are going on over here. First of all, he had nachas because he didn't really know what was going to happen with Esav. Secondly, we get into a story about lentils and comforting mourners. This may be a story at the side, but it may be coming to teach us two other very powerful things. One of the things about having it all might be that when times are tough, you have people to comfort you and methods to be comforted. It says over here that mourning comes around to everybody in the world. Having it all doesn't necessarily mean, according to this interpretation, that everything is fine and dandy every second of the day, that every single box is checked every single second of the day. It means, though, bad things will happen. In fact, I'm always very careful to, at funerals not to say, or at Shiva not to say, you shouldn't have any future sorrow, because that's basically wishing the person dead. You will have future sorrow. That is what life is. The only way you won't have future sorrow is if you yourself die. Based upon a rabbi, I think his name is Gerald Steinberg, I'm not sure, he says you should say to people, I've adapted it, may the good times and the brachot in your life exceed the difficult times. May the balance be in favor of the good ones. And maybe a way of having it all is that you have people who come and comfort you when things are tough, and methods and ways and structures, rituals that are able to bring you back to the world of the living. So we had children, money, wisdom, goodness, ability to help others, nachas from children, people to comfort you when times are tough, structures to bring you back and closer into the world when things are difficult. So that's explaining that Esau did not break loose. Devar Acher, we're back into number two. It says, She'aya asa Yishmael tshuva b'yamav, that Ishmael repented in his time. And that is in number four. How do we know that Ishmael did tshuva while Avram was still alive? Says the Gemara, from the discussion which took place between Ravina and Rabbi Chama ben Buzi when they were sitting. And he said, how do we know this? Because the Pasuk says, and I've actually given you the Pasuk, Vayikberu oto Yitzhak v'Yishmael, Bereshit 25:9. Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah. What is significant about this? That it shows Isaac first. Isaac is not the oldest child. If anything, Ishmael should be first. But it says the Gemara, the fact that Ishmael allowed Isaac to go first shows that Ishmael made way from him, and says the Gemara, and from the fact that he made way for him, we infer that he repented in Avram's lifetime. Again, it wasn't perfect, but they did come together. They were able to overcome their strife. So having it all does involve children who get along with each other, and those of us who have children do know, or maybe who have siblings, know how important this can be. But it doesn't mean that it just happens, and there is a process that goes towards it. One of the things I found, especially as a community rabbi, when I worked in a community, I should say, but certainly during my years of teaching at Pardes and in other places, very, very often when you scratch people where everything looks perfect, beneath the surface you often find that it's come at very often at tremendous work, sometimes at a tremendous price, and very, very often it doesn't look as rosy as it might seem. So it seems, in fact, that there is a checklist. Children, nachas from children, wisdom, helping others, goodness, fame, people to comfort you, children that get on together. It seems indeed that there is a checklist for having it all. And I think there really are a few extremes in it. There is the one extreme, or one pole, I should rather say, which is Ezehu Ashir Hasameach Bechelko, who is rich, asks the Mishnah, Hasameach Bechelko, the one who is happy with his lot. And there is a story on this line of a very, very poor chassid who would always say the prayer, Shasali Kol Tzorki, who has given me everything, on the top of his voice. And people said, how can it be that you say this with such passion? He said, well, it must be that I have everything that I want. It must be that poverty is what I need, and therefore God gave it to me. On the one hand, there is the idea that the way that I should live my life is accept everything is from God and be able to be happy regardless of what I want, because this is clearly what I'm meant to have. And on the other hand is the checklist, whether it be my middle class checklist or the checklist that we've spoken about over here. And I'd like to share two ideas about it. I once asked a very wise friend this question, and I expected him to go in the direction of, you know, it's all about belief. It's all about faith in God. And he didn't actually go in that direction. What he said was, I don't think you have to have all these little boxes checked, but it's really nice to have some of these boxes checked. And I think what we're seeing in this piece that we read today from Baba Batra is that Avram had a lot of boxes checked, but it didn't come easily. It didn't come without struggle, and it wasn't black and white. But I see something else going on. We started off our little piece of Gemara with the vort, the idea that whether a child is a bracha is dependent upon how you relate to your children. We also mentioned the disturbing fact that, yes, Avram did have nachas from his grandchild Esau, but it's only because he didn't know everything. This is a very, very cynical idea, but I think it can be flipped to the positive and say something very, very important. One, a lot of whether we're happy or not, a lot of whether we feel we have everything that we could have, depends on our attitude and our approach. And the second is, sometimes it's good not to know everything. Sometimes ignorance is bliss. Sometimes it's a sign of wisdom, and it's a sign, and will bring greater happiness if one doesn't know absolutely everything. Obviously, if this goes too far, it can lead to moral obtuseness. It can lead to many, many bad things. But sometimes, better not to know. Sometimes, better to not have all the facts. May we all have it all. May God bless us all, b'kol mikol kol, as Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov were blessed. But even if we have it all, we could always want more. And even if we don't have it all, we can be happy with what we are. We have a few blessings. One is that we get a lot of what we want and that we're satisfied with it. And perhaps, whether we're mourning or not, may the brachot and the smachot in our lives outweigh the difficult times. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkreuz. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.